A couple of months ago, my wife and I bought a condo near the beach. We liked everything about it, but there was one problem. My wife, and the real estate agent too, I might add, could barely breathe in the place. Something in the carpet, in the upholstery, perhaps embedded in the ceiling paint. It was a smell. The dank, stale smell of tobacco. I confess that a 20-year-long smoking habit that I broke nearly 20 years ago has left me largely insensate in matters of smell. My olfactory sense is a casualty of too many cigarettes, too many mentholated cigarettes, too many cigars, cheap cigars, not-so-cheap cigars, mentholated little cigars, more cigarettes, and the kind of pipe tobacco that goes with corduroy jackets with elbow patches, and of course more cigarettes. But even my crippled nostrils could detect something noxious in the air of the condo, something that only steam cleaning and painting and not buying the furniture would expunge. That smell of tobacco used to be the smell of daily life. It clung to clothing. Kisses tasted of it. It accompanied food at the table, drinks at the bar, and stories in conversation. And only now has a generation come of age assuming that at least some American hotel rooms will not reek of it, that office meetings will not be clouded with it. It was the smell of America in the 20th century, a century that has passed, and, at least in this country, has largely taken its odor with it to oblivion. We asked several of our commentators what they remember of that smell. We begin with Ralph Schoenstein, who grew up in Manhattan.
The scent of cigarette smoke always sends me not to a chest x-ray, but a vanished New York, where there was romance and wrecking your lungs, where smoke hung in the air like mist on the moors, in restaurants, ballparks, Penn Station, and even my home. A heavy smoker, my father never knew the irony of the name Lucky Strike. Smoking then had the glamour of a lover lighting two cigarettes at once, for Betty Davis in Now Voyager. But in trying to enchant a girl on the roof of the Astor Hotel at my senior prom, I could offer her only two pieces of gum. Across Broadway from the Astor roof, a huge Camel's billboard sent smoke rings rising above the glow of Times Square, great white zeros that told my father's chance to live a long life. I can still see those rings of lethal loveliness. All the mist is now in a mind foolishly wistful for a world so full of carcinogenic allure.
It's Ralph Schoenstein. Mary Jo Peel inhales her stale smoke smell in Minnesota.
These days, whenever I smell the scent of stale cigarette smoke, I think of my college roommate, Sally. Sally had an elegant aura of cigarette smoke and Ralph Lauren perfume. This, and that she was from Chicago, and that her name was Sally, made her the most glamorous person I'd ever known. Sally was outgoing and fearless, and I was shy and mortified by everything. Sally was always trying to quit smoking, and once she decided to try to sleep until 1 or 2 in the afternoon, so she'd have less of the day to battle her cigarette cravings. Sally coaxed me out to the bars in our college town, and I felt like I'd finally been invited to the world's party. Here were people who sat and smoked and drank and talked about excellent things, and mundane things which seemed like excellent things. I'd go to bed, my hair laced with the smell of stale smoke, and my clothes tinged with the odor of beer. And I could hardly sleep because I had been somewhere.
Mary Jo Peel. Las Vegas is a town where the smell of cigarette smoke is no stranger. The entertainer Teller lives there.
I was 10 years old and out in the countryside with my parents for a fresh fall day away from the stinky old city. It was time to go home, and as we packed up the picnic gear, our dog Bowser, a big black Labrador, bounded out of the forest. He had been delighting his doggy nature by rolling in deer droppings. My father handed me a box of Kleenex and a jug of water. I scraped, rinsed, and scrubbed Bowser as best I could. Then my mother spread newspapers on the back seat of the Ford ranch wagon, and my father invited me to ride back there with Bowser. Riding in the back seat always tended to make me car sick. So as we drove through the autumn dusk, the cocktail of swaying car and stinking dog made me drunk with nausea. And then my father lit up a Camel. The cool air rushed over my father's sunburnt forearm and sent slender, silvery tendrils slithering up my nostrils. I inhaled, shivered, smiled, and sank back in the seat, completely, miraculously cured.
teller of the act, Penn and Teller. Daniel Pinkwater now inhales the pure air of the upper Hudson River Valley, but the memories stale cigarette smoke trigger for him come from a far more urban past.
When I get a faceful of that cloying, soggy stench of cigarette smoke in a confined space, I flash back to my 14th year. Right next to Lakeview High School in Chicago was a place known as, are you ready, Pops. Understand, I had just been transplanted from a neighborhood in Los Angeles with trees and lawns. My friends took oboe lessons and belonged to the chess club and the science club. Nobody smoked. My first day at Lakeview, having been advised that Pops was the place to go for a greaseburger and a Coke, I stepped inside the door. The smoke was so thick you couldn't see all the way to the end of the room. Combined with the tobacco miasma was airborne grease and the smell of frying gristle. Also, adolescent sweat, wild root cream oil, cheap perfume. Guys with leather jackets and haircuts that would have gotten them arrested in my old neighborhood were dancing with girls with bad skin, heavily made up, wearing baggy black skirts tight around the calves. This was a scene like nothing I had known. There was an undercurrent of animal lust and incipient violence. Pop was behind the counter, frying things. "Give me a cheeseburger and a Coke," I said, "and a pack of Luckies."
Daniel Pinkwater. For our final exploration of the effects of olfactory exposure to the smell of cigarettes, we return to New York City and Peter Freundlich.
I think of the student union at college, a large unpartitioned room with round and square and rectangular tables, surrounded both by hard and by soft chairs, and plumes of smoke everywhere, produced by children who thought ourselves grown, talking nonsense we thought profound. The plumes were proof of that, proof that we too were burning, were small, intense lights in the darkness, were sucking the meaning out of the world and breathing it back out again. Transformed. I smoked a brand called Passing Clouds. Death then happened only in the books we spent hours arguing about. Illness was for the old. We lived in a world without consequence. All these years later, two of my mentors are dead of the habit, and a good friend is missing a lung. A cigarette, we all know now, is a fuse. Back then, though, it was not a fuse. It was a flare. Do I miss the innocent stupidity of that? Yes.
Peter Freundlich, completing our stroll down the on-ramp to memory lane, accessed by exposure to that fading aroma of American life, the smell of stale cigarette smoke.